You guys are live.
Hello, everyone. I see a number of attendees are joining right now. We will kick this off in about 30 seconds as the numbers keep ticking up. All right, we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome to the session for Flip into Active Learning with Julie Gunkelman. Julie Gunkelman is a mathematics faculty member at Oakland Community College's Orchard Ridge campus. She earned her Master of Arts in Mathematics from Eastern Michigan University and her Bachelor of Science in Mathematics at Michigan State University. She uses a variety of instructional techniques to create an active learning environment in her classes. Julie was awarded the Mishmatic Teaching Excellence Award in 2014 and was a finalist for the Faculty Innovation Award from the American Association of Community Colleges in 2018. Additionally, she served as the Professional Development Coordinator of AMATIC from 2016 through 2018. So if you're here, the chat is open for you guys to chat throughout, introduce yourself. If you have a question, please use the Q&A function, and Julie will get through some of those questions toward the end of the session. Okay, thank you. Here's Julie.
Yeah, thank you, Greg, and thank you all for attending today. When I sat down, my pre-pandemic self sat down and submitted my proposal for this conference, I did it because so many people tell me that the flipped class doesn't work, but I've been using it for 7 years. And today I want to share with you why I started flipping, how I do it, and what I've learned along the way. I'm going to go ahead and share my slides here. So that I can hear from you all today, I'm going to have you log into a Desmos activity. And so if you've never used one of these before, you're going to go to student.desmos.com and you type in the code, which is RC5 3JE, and I believe that Greg was going to put a link to that right into the chat so that you can go ahead and join that Desmos activity. Now, there are going to be a couple times along the way today where I do like share my screen so you can see what's happening. I did hit the anonymize button, so you guys are not using your real name. So when you're sharing your answers with me and each other, I'm not going to know your real identities. But it seems like you're starting to fill the room, which is awesome. We are getting there. So, when you have the full screen, you to balance both of them, you've got to just exit out of full screen from the presentation so that you can kind of go back and forth between this activity and what I am showing on my screen. All right, so you guys are getting in there, and you guys can see that there is one screen open for you in the upper right-hand corner. If you hit next, you can see that I'm asking you a question, and it is, where are you at today? So what I want you to do is just drag the point to show how you're feeling today. Positive, negative, are you tired? Are you full of energy? Those kinds of things. And I'm going to show you what it looks like on my side for that particular screen. Oh my gosh, this is so much different than asking students, you guys. So much different. So if you look at what I have, what I'm seeing on my side of the activity is that you guys are very positive. More of you have energy. Students tend to be down in quadrant four. Like, they're usually fairly positive, but they're always telling me that they're tired, right? So you guys have got a little bit of a leg up on them here for sure. Now, when you go to add the next slide, so I'm kind of controlling the situation here on this dashboard. When you go to add another slide, you really just hit another one. So I'm using the pacing feature, and now you can see that I'm asking you to, I'm gonna go ahead and get that out of the way. I'm asking you to sketch your ability to lecture over. This is being time, and then your lecture grade. I just did it on a 100-point scale for you guys to sketch what you are looking at. Oh my gosh. So you can use the little pencil. You can use the line. Oh, you guys have interesting looking graphs for sure that are coming in. Some of you, it looks like very much it was an increasing function. Some of you look like you're tapering off. So maybe it's that you're not lecturing as much, which is possible. It looks pretty good. So I was anticipating, some of you, it looks like a sine curve. It's going up and down. And, depending on what happened with waxing and waning, it goes. But for the most part, most of you look like you are definitely increasing over time. So my next question is, how did you get better at that? How did you get better at communicating your ideas to your students? So go ahead, and I see you guys shifting to the next screen to answer that question for me. So some of the answers, I did check it so that you guys could share answers with each other. And it's my understanding that when you do that, you can see three students and three other students. Well, I'm calling it students because it is a student activity, but you can see three other participants' responses. So I'm getting a lot of practice. Practicing. Wow, lots of you saying experience. By making mistakes, adjusting, and making more mistakes. Okay, awesome. Definitely. So you guys are, coming up with pretty much what I expected that you were going to, what you were going to respond. And so I want to tell you a story about my lecturing experience of mine and the one that made me decide that I wanted to flip my class. And so if you can picture this, I am in my classroom, over at Orchard Ridge campus. It was an afternoon class. I know it was fairly full, like there were a lot of students in the room, but I don't remember all of the details about like the class or what the topic was, but I do remember this, and it's the pivotal part, is when I was doing my best stuff. I got better at lecturing over time, just like you guys are saying that you did, and I am giving them my best stuff, and I look out, and it looks like I've got the blank stares, the stares like, I have no idea what you are just talking about. And I felt so exhausted. I felt like I pulled a dead cow up a hill, right? That's how I felt. I felt like I pulled a dead cow up a hill, and I'm feeling like I should be at the top, right? And I'm going to go ahead and let go. And I let go. And then the cow, of course, slides right back down the hill. And that's how I felt. It was just that whole feeling of, yeah, this is just not working very well. And so I started to think, well, what about like this whole experience, right? Think about what my first year in the classroom, for example. I know it's kind of scary to think back there for sure, but how much did you really learn your first year of teaching, right? And for me, it was not just about behavioral issues. I started in a high school and I had tons of behavioral issues, right? I was 22, very green, and in a high school. And I'll just give you a little overview. My 5th and 6th hour classes, the last 2 hours of the day, were fundamental math, okay? So for 9th graders, it was not necessarily a good situation. So obviously I learned a lot, but I also learned how to communicate these ideas. Like you guys are saying, practicing, trying different things, researching. Some of you said that you were gonna research. And I'm scanning down this list, and none of you said, let's see, I can't read the whole list because there's quite a few comments in there, but none of you are saying that you just watched other people lecture, right? I'm not seeing that in the activity here. None of your answers look like that. And of course, I think Kristen Swanson says it the best, right? The one doing the work is doing the learning. So that's what I really thought about when that afternoon that was so horrible that I said, oh my gosh, I can't do this anymore. There's gotta be a better way. There's gotta be something else that I can do to help my students learn. And doing some research, so some of you said in the response there that you did some research. And of course, I'm sure everybody has seen at least a variation of this learning pyramid, right? And you know, up at the top is your average retention rate for lecture is like 5%, okay? It's not very good. And I know you're probably thinking, wait a minute, Julie, I demonstrate problems, right? I demonstrate problems. And look, that retention rate is 30%. That is so much better, which is like, it's true, right? You guys are 100% correct. But wouldn't it be better if we could create a situation where students were able to discuss, practice the kind of problems that they were doing right now and just use them, of course, immediately. And so when I saw this, I'm like, yeah, that's what I need to do. I need to flip this class. And maybe it's not the terminology that sometimes that we like, but it's basically the idea, right? That I'm gonna go ahead and move my my lecture, if you will, outside of the classroom. And so again, I'm doing this so that my students have an opportunity to collaborate and discuss with each other. You know, being able to speak math and hearing it from other people besides me, I think is very powerful. And then don't forget, like, how many times have you heard this, right? That, oh, you know, Mrs. Gunkelman, but you fill in your own name, of course, right? I really knew what you were talking about when we were together in class. But when I got home and I went to go do my homework, I couldn't do it. Like, I got stuck. And so I really want to be present for the things that are hard for our students. So be there for those tough spots for them so that they're not by themselves when they are doing their homework by themselves at home. The other thing, of course, I wanted to be able to do is provide the students an opportunity to teach other students. And I know people say, well, wait a minute, Julie, wait, hang on a second, right? You're just going to have all the A students teach everybody. And I have watched the magic of creating this situation, and it's not true. It's not always just the A students who are, you know, trying to explain to other people. And sometimes they don't see things the same way because they got it right away, right? So that struggle is definitely present. And when you can hear students talk about that, and talk about, hey, I really know how to do this problem and I can explain it to you this time. It is so truly very awesome. Okay, so, you know, how do I do these lessons? And so I'm gonna refer that you go back to the activity and I'm gonna open up the next slide for you on the Decimals activity. And what you're gonna do is put the activities that I have here that in order from what the student would do first to what they would do last to complete a lesson. And so I can get your little feedback right there. And I will bring this overlay over once a few more of you have answered. So some of you are still back on the other slide. That's kind of cool about this too, is that you can see where everybody is. How interesting. Okay, I'll give you a few more minutes there. It looks like almost everybody's moved over there. So, and it's okay if you didn't join, like if you're in the chat window and you're like, Julie, I just can't listen to you and do this at the same time. That is okay. That is not a problem. Okay. So you guys are pretty good. Pretty good. Let me bring it on over for you so you can see. So, it does say answer key. I wonder, should I flip it there? Oh, pretty good. You guys did fairly, fairly well. So the first thing that I do with my students is they are going to take notes or work through a scaffolded lesson. So I do use two textbooks for my non-STEM classes that have scaffolded lessons. So I don't do videos for those, but I make my own videos. And just like you guys were reporting at the beginning, right? You're good at lecturing, right? So some people would tell me, like, when I first started doing this, oh my gosh, I can't possibly record myself, right? Well, if one thing has happened since, the middle of March of 2020 is that a lot more people have recorded themselves right by now. So I have my own set of notes that I do. And basically what I did when I first started doing this was I took my lecture notes and I took like half the problems and I took them out. And then I recorded myself doing those, like the problems that were left. You know, the big idea, I still explain all that. You know, I do demonstrate some problems, but I wanted to take some of that out of there because students really don't need to watch me do six problems like from this section, right? You know, maybe two are enough. But I took at least half of those problems out. And then that's what I'm going to have students do in class. So I saved those. So I have students complete an assignment that contains a few introductory problems. So I call them prep work assignments. And so students will take notes. They will then do these problems. And I make sure that it's only one page. I don't want to burden them with a whole lot of things to do. I just want to get a little bit of a taste of, do you really know how to do this kind of problem or not? And so if you were to rate problems like A, B, C, right? A being the kind of introductory problems and C being those really hard, challenging problems, the ones that take a lot more critical thinking that, you know, you have to develop and add a lot of topics onto. My prep work assignments are like the A. Every once in a while, like maybe a B sneaks in just because of the topics, but I keep it to one page. I keep it to be the introductory topics and I make it a low stakes grade. So they do turn it in. I do grade them and it lets me know what they know and they don't know. So they are basically giving me a hint, right, as to how their study session went. And I can adjust for that before I ever get to class, which is, it's super awesome. So I actually have the students do a self-assessment in the middle. So before I see them, right, in this prep work assignment, they are letting me know, and I'll show you these questions in a second, but they're letting me know kind of like where they are in terms of this material, what kind of help they're going to need. I leave a space for them to ask me any questions that they have. They normally don't ask a lot of questions, I'll be honest, but sometimes they do. And they're like, hey, on example, you know, number three that you had in the notes, I don't know why you did this. Can you talk about that in class tomorrow? And I'm sure to note that. And something that I always do is I always talk about what I saw in the prep work assignments in class. It takes just a few seconds to say, hey, this was good. This wasn't good. Let's work on this. I want you to focus on this kind of mistake when we're going to do these problems today. So I do that self-assessment piece. And then students in class, you guys did really well on this one, right? Review, practice, and reflect in groups or class. Obviously that's going to be in class. And then you send them home for their individual practice so that hopefully they've got a lot more skills now that when they're sitting there and you know, they're doing it at like 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, right? So when they're sitting there by themselves, that hopefully they've had some more experiences along the way that they're going to be really successful at those problems. So let me move this out of here so I can show you the self-assessment that I do at the end of the I shouldn't have said lesson, I should say my prep work assignment, right? So I've got four categories here. I know how to do these problems very well and I could explain it to someone else. Students that circle this either are very confident that they know how to do it and they really do, or they think that they know how to do it and they really don't. So this is kind of scary, right? When you ask them how they're rating their progress here and they're saying, oh yeah, I totally can do this. And then you've noticed that all their problems are wrong. Of course, that is a little bit scary. Most students select either my B or my C. So B is I know how to do these problems fairly well, and I need to practice to reinforce the concepts. And then C is I'm still learning to do these. So I need my notes or my book to get started. Like most of the students circle someplace around in there. And then my last one is that I don't know how to use these problems yet, and I'm not sure how to get started. And like maybe like thinking about this, if you've never done this, is that you might be thinking, oh, students are going to select that one all the time. They don't. They actually don't. I have a couple negative Nellies sometimes that do select D quite a bit. And I usually do, you know, call them out on it a little bit, talk to them about it in class. And one woman this summer, she kept circling D on every single assignment. And in my, it was an intermediate algebra class, and she just had bad experiences all along. But that one day that she circled C, like she actually moved the needle a little bit, I pounced on it. And I actually called it out in class. I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, this is awesome. And you know, so-and-so actually circled it. And she, when I'm talking in my whole group in my remote classes, I don't require that cameras to be on, but I do encourage them to turn their cameras on when they're in their small group so that they can connect with each other. And in the middle of class, she turned her camera on, which normally was always facing the ceiling. I think she was just on her phone or something, and she had it always facing up. And she looked at me and she's like, I did get that, Mrs. Gunkelman, and I feel really good about it. So it was just totally awesome that I can connect with them. I want to show you a couple of shots. So when I first started the flipped class and having students collaborate and getting them to work together, of course I had some physical barriers in my classroom, right? Like this is the classroom that I had the whole epiphany, like I don't need to be lecturing all the time anymore moment. And I had to move the desks around. I had to move them around, and I tried to have the students move the desks around, but they never made it so that I could actually get around all their bags and in between the groups and actually see what was going on and go and talk to them. So I usually ended up definitely moving those desks around. I had them put them back. Having students put desks into, six rows that have five desks in each is awesome. They can totally do that all day, but to try to get a group to get them there is definitely difficult. So physical barriers, obviously, you know, if you're in a traditional classroom, you've got to move some furniture around. Like when you start to do some of the activities, right, the cool stuff, sometimes that's hard. Like this is a puzzle, and I will link to this activity at the end. So if you're wondering like what it is, it's a puzzle. I think it's by Susan Wall, I believe, is the person who did this. And basically they are matching up some complex expressions with each other, and it makes a big hexagon when you're done. So there's a physical barrier there, right? They don't have room to do this. They kind of split it over the desks or put it on one. And honestly, sometimes students are so excited that they finish this activity with their group, they take a picture of the puzzle at the end, like, oh my gosh, I got this thing done. You know, here's another situation where this is an activity that I call pass and complete, where students would just do one step and then the next student would do the other one. And the reason why I made all those different papers different colors is because then at the end, you know, I would look at these six groups and I would say, take all the purple papers, and I would show them and like, oh, look, you guys all did this problem the same, right? Or, oh, some group did something a little bit differently, and then we can talk about that. So it leads to a lot of conversation. Another activity that I do in class a lot is I'll tell you what to write. And so I made that name up. Basically, these students are sharing a whiteboard, and there is one whiteboard, one marker, and then one eraser. And you give them a problem, and the person with the marker has to listen to the other one tell them how to do the problem. And it does get a little bit loud, I'm not gonna lie, but it's really kind of cool to hear all the stuff that's going on about how they want to do the problems. And you know, you can walk around and look pretty quickly to see if they are getting that right. And it's a pretty fun thing to do. Now, I'm lucky enough that I found a space finally at my college that I've got tables. And so it's a game changer. I had students that followed me from, it was up in the sequence. It wasn't the same class, okay? they followed me from the room that we kept rearranging every class to this one. And they said, it just makes such a big difference. So physical space, it's huge, right? You need to be able to have a space that students can collaborate and work with each other. And so you can see that they're, you know, working together, and it seems like it's a very good thing. So you might be thinking, Julie, how do you get your students to work together, right? Now, obviously I selected some pictures where it looks like, you know, there's some good learning going on and good collaboration. It all goes back to the first day. It all goes back to the first day. So I'm going to open up the next screen for you on Desmos, which is just to give me a checkbox of what things that you do on the first day of class. So what do you do in your class on the very first day with, and I'll give you a second to answer because not everybody has advanced to that next screen there. Okay. All right. I did leave an other at the end in case you have something that you want to add. Let's see if you have some good ideas in there for sure. So it looks like most of you have answered. And now I want to share with you what it is that I do on the first day of class. Okay, so in this collaborative environment, I want to make sure that I thought my little trigger, there we go. I want to help students meet each other. And I don't have my phone handy right now, but you know what it's like, right? And I've observed this when I walk around on campus is that when students are waiting for a class, right, they have their face in their phone all the time. And sometimes I think they just need a little bit of a boost. And so lots of you are saying that you help students meet each other, which is so awesome, very awesome. I don't stand in the front anymore and like call off the attendance, right? And like figure out who is in my class. And so instead I actually go around the room. I give some kind of an icebreaker activity, which some of you are noting in the other category. So, you know, I give them an activity. So sometimes I just do like show a picture on your phone, right? Like get a picture on your phone that you want to show your group. And that is your icebreaker. And so then I'll go around and I'll take attendance. I'll check them off my list. And I have the students say their name to me. It really helps me to hear them. I'm not always that great with some of the names and some of the ways that they pronounce them for sure. So that is super helpful. I also give the students a reason to work together, some kind of a thing. So you're going to notice that I skipped read the syllabus. So I do not read the syllabus anymore to my students. I give them a syllabus. It usually takes about like in a 2-hour class, it usually they don't get the syllabus to the first hour because I'm working on all of the collaboration kind of stuff and buy-in. I do share that learning pyramid with my students. I tell them why I am structuring the class the way that I am, just to try to create that buy-in. And so, you know, about an hour in, I'm like, well, you know, what kind of questions do you guys have, right? Just take a minute and think about what questions do you have for this class, right? And I do basically a think, pair, share. So then, hey, talk to the people here, you know, next to you in your group. And what kind do you have similar questions? You know, what are you concerned about? They're always concerned about the grades, of course. And then, you know, you can give them this wonderful document that's going to answer all their questions. It's the syllabus, right? So that's how I give them their syllabus. And they sometimes I give them a syllabus quiz. So that's a reason to work together. Maybe it's going to be, you know, something else, but basically I give them a reason to work together. So usually it's a syllabus quiz for sure. It's a little shocking, but I would say 95% of the time, I do not do math on the first day. I know it's a gasp. We're virtual, right? If we were all in the same room, I could see the looks on your faces. You're like, well, what do you mean you don't do math on the first day? It's a math class. So if I have the 3 or 4 hour block, if I have a longer class, I probably am going to do some kind of a review activity, but I'm certainly never, ever going to lecture, right? I'm not going to do that because I don't want them to rely on that mode of delivery for the content. So at least the introductory. So I honestly don't do a lot of math on the first day, which I know is kind of scary, I think. I just wanted to glance down at the, the handshake problem. That's good. So you guys probably do have um, a, a whole bunch of ideas. I can't wait to go back and read them for sure. So you're like, okay, Julie, you don't do math on the first day. You send them off, right, to get this lesson of this progression of you're going to do something outside of class to learn the material, and then you are going to come back. And this question always comes up when I talk about the flipped classroom. What if the students don't take the notes or they don't complete the prep work? And I am here to tell you, you really just need a critical mass. You're not going to get 100%. And I think that that is okay. Now, there's a couple things that I do, of course, to try to encourage students along the way. And one of them, and this is really important, this is the biggest thing, is don't reteach the material from the video lesson. They are going to come in, they will whine, they will say, oh, I don't understand. And they're used to teachers just giving in and just explaining things to them, right? Because that's how this system works. They are working you. You do not want to reteach that material under any circumstances. You can't just say, oh, we're going to scrap all that work that you guys did ahead of time, right? Because then they're not going to do it. So you want to make sure that you do not do that. You want to ask them questions. You want to turn it back around on them and start to say, like, just try to figure out where it went amok, if that is true, like what do they understand? What do they not understand? And you want to listen. So if you watch some of the teaching tip videos, Dave Sebecki has one, and he talks about this issue in that as well. And he literally has duct tape on his mouth. And it's true. Like you really just need to kind of take a step back and listen to them to try to figure out what it is that they know and they don't know, because they probably know a little bit more than they are letting on sometimes. And now I've not quite perfected this on the remote setting, but I am much better at this in person, and it's peer pressure, right? Oh my gosh. You know, when I first started flipping, I had, I listened to a conversation with students, and it has stuck with me. You know, student A says to student B, you know, hey, did you do that video thing that she wanted us to do? Like, you know, did you figure that out? And, you know, student B is like, well, yeah, I did. You know, if you didn't do it, how are you going to do what she wants you to do next? Right. And that's kind of the environment that has created in the classroom. I've got a student that I had in the winter. She is a supplemental instructor for a different instructor. And that instructor was talking to her about, you know, flipping her class. And, you know, the question came up with the student, and I heard this from the instructor, is, you know, how does she get her students to do this? And the student said to my colleague, you wouldn't dare. You wouldn't dare not be prepared, because we don't want to, you know, see, you don't want anyone to see that you don't know what she's talking about or that you didn't give it an effort. So that definitely is powerful for sure. Okay. This is probably, you know, a harder one. Obviously, this was not part of my original idea when I put in for this presentation. But basically, we all have pictures like this. We've all struggled. We've all had things that we've missed. This is my daughter's graduation from Michigan State University. You know, I'd never thought I was going to be celebrating in my backyard with just the four of us. And I want you to really think about what's on the other side. You know, it's easy to get bogged down with, you know, all the things that are going on. But I think that at the end of this, we're all going to value time together so much more. And, you know, thinking about meaningful learning experiences, so getting away from the personal or back to teaching, is that thinking about meaningful learning experiences when we are together in the classroom. So as I am wrapping up here, I just have a couple of things. And my first thing is focus on the learning opportunities that you can create in class by flipping your class, not the videos. That's not the magic bullet, right? You're still lecturing. I'm still the same lecturer that I was before, which was pretty good, right? It's just now on video instead of in person. So focus on that. I have helped a few peers flip their classes. And I will say this, it does take a lot of courage. You're out of your comfort zone. And if we've learned anything in 2020, hopefully it's how to deal with being out of our comfort zone, right? Like, what does that feel like? We all definitely have experienced that this year. And it does take a little bit of courage. It takes a courage to be in front of a classroom and listen to students and let them kind of run the show, right? Instead of us running the show, that takes courage. Don't feel like you're alone, certainly. And to make sure that you are not alone, I highly recommend that you create some kind of a support system for yourself, right? I recently helped a chemistry faculty member at my school flip her classes. And sometimes she would just say, you know, Julie, do you have just a few minutes that we could just sit down and talk? And I did. I always listened to her and I learned things from it as well. It wasn't just me giving time to her. I learned about my own teaching from it as well. And my idea for this presentation was to be able to create a network so that you guys could support each other. I have, and I think it's on my last slide as well. We flip to that. And Greg is going to put these links in the chat for you as well. But I have a Google form that if you are interested in collaborating with people, getting together, and I promise that I will do something. I don't know what it's going to look like. It's going to be different. You know, if only five people fill out my form and say, hey, yeah, Julie, you know, I want to connect to support and get ideas, it's going to look a lot different than if there's 50 people in that sheet. So I want to somehow connect people so that they can support each other through this process. And then some of my activities that I mentioned are in the second bit.ly there, the bit.ly beyond the worksheet. I did a presentation a couple years ago at AMATIC that was beyond the worksheet, and I turned it into a webinar, which the recording is linked in that live binder that I have there, and then a whole bunch of activities. Now, the last time that I actually gave the beyond the worksheet presentation was actually remotely, ironically enough, for Wismatic. I was in Michigan and I could not get to Wisconsin that weekend. And so I did present that one virtually, but I had John Oakes was kind enough to, he actually went to the conference and he took all my games, all my, you know, different card sorts, and he handed them out and collected them and helped answer questions because he has seen it before. So I did have a lot of help that day, but that was a virtual presentation that I did for Beyond the Worksheet. Okay, so I think we're to the point now where we have got maybe some questions we've collected along the way.
Yeah, there are quite a few questions, and there are a lot that are sort of a similar question.
Okay.
So how do you do the group activities in the online classroom? How have you handled flipping the classroom with COVID, specifically with group work?
Right.
What's the most effective way to flip a classroom in the online environment? So a lot of those.
Okay.
The same.
So certainly I've got 7 years of experience flipping a class on the ground, right? And I only have, I can't even think how long it's been. Has it been eight months? That's all the experience that I have flipping online, but I have kept that model. And so what I have been doing is, creating activities like this Desmos activity to try to get students to interact. I also use a lot of breakout rooms in my classes. So I do meet my classes synchronously right now during this time. And I try to chunk it up so that, you know, I talk to them for a little bit and say, hey, this is what I noticed on your prep work assignment, or watch out for this kind of thing when you're looking at these problems. And they actually have bought a course pack. I typed up a course pack for them so that I'm not just releasing problems to them. I found out pretty quickly this summer that you can't just release problems on your learning management system and make it feel like you're passing out a worksheet, because it's not the same. And it's not the same as writing a problem on the board. So I am giving students problems ahead of time, right? They've got them. I ask them to look at them. But if they can't finish it, like if they don't know what to do, I ask them not to, so that they don't learn something wrong. And then I give them time in their breakout rooms to talk about those problems. And then they ask questions on the other side of that, that breakout room. So, so did I get most of that high overview anyway of all those?
Yeah. Okay. And then there's another like sort of pair of questions that are related. One is, how do you get students to actually do the assignments, watch the lectures before class? And then do you have a way to have a grade attached to watching the videos and taking notes ahead of time so that you know who is prepared, hopefully, and who isn't?
Okay. So I do give an engagement grade for coming to class and being engaged. It is very low stakes, very low points. But it helps kids like not just have their seat in the seat, if you will. So I do give a grade for that, but I don't give a grade currently for like watching the notes and taking the notes. They do get a small grade for the prep work assignment. And the biggest things again that I do to make sure that they do it is I don't reteach it in class. They have to make sure that they're prepared. And then I also that peer pressure, which I haven't exactly found that sweet spot of the remote yet, because they're not facing everyone. So that's a little bit different for sure. But I do have, like when I mentioned, I saw this in the prep work assignment. I see that you guys are having a hard time with this. It does create that, oh yeah, she is looking at this. We want to make sure that we get the most out of the experience. So they usually do the things in advance.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And let me see. Pretty straightforward question here. How long are your video lectures?
Oh, so, you know, I know there's a lot of research about that. Honestly, some of them are really short and some of them probably are a little bit too long. I don't think that there's something magical about it. I know sometimes my students are like, oh, thank goodness, right? Thank goodness that one was a little bit shorter. It depends on the class. And I pretty much just do a whole lesson. Like, so it's a whole idea, very similar to a section in a book. Sometimes I combine sections in a book. They probably don't need as many examples as you think. I do know this though, from research of when I first started doing this, if you make a video that's 10 minutes long, they probably take 15 minutes to watch it. So keep that in mind when you're making something like that, because they're gonna pause, and I teach them to pause. You get a pause, maybe think about something again, or they write it down, et cetera. And I leave a little natural pauses in there. I don't edit them all out, certainly. But it gives them time to interact with that material.
Okay. And then another question about the videos. What do you use to record those videos?
I use Camtasia to record them. But again, I don't think there's any magic bullet, right? It's just whatever you guys are comfortable using to make them. And I don't do like a spot, an A job on every video. And I certainly don't bring in like a lot of graphics, and it's just me talking just like I would normally be doing in class. Don't spend a lot of energy on that. You guys, don't do it. That the magic is going to happen when they're in class. So concentrate on that, not on the actual video.
Okay. And I'm going to try to squeeze in a couple more groups of questions here really quickly. One asks, which courses have you flipped? Another asks if you've done it for developmental math courses.
Okay. So I have flipped every class that I teach. I teach 11 different classes. They are all flipped. And the developmental class, the lowest level class that I flipped, was preparation for algebra. And I'm not gonna lie, it's exhausting. If you're just starting, don't start with the lowest level of class that you teach. Try to, go for more of the middle, like a college algebra or a trig, something like that. Get your confidence, and then you're gonna feel so sad that you're not flipping the other ones. It's gonna make it a lot easier, for sure.
Okay. And then, probably the last question we'll be able to answer during our time. And again, a couple groupings here. How do we do group work in a mask to mask when we're masked to mask in the classroom? Or how have you modified the I'll tell you how to do the problem in a social distance situation?
Yeah, so I actually haven't figured out the I'll tell you how to do it in a social distance situation. And I am all remote, so I'm not meeting students in person right now. You know, masked and distant and all that. So I don't have experience with that. But yeah, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what some of you guys are going through. So again, it might be something to think about for when you're on the other side of this than maybe right now.
Great. And I'm sorry we didn't get to all the questions, but we do have to wrap up here. So I'm going to put the links that Julie had in her presentation one more time. So in the chat, there is the first link, and here is the second link. And then one more little blurb here that I have in a separate document with some directions on how to find where you're going to go next. So awesome. Thank you everybody for coming, and thank you, Julie, for a great presentation. Lot of great ideas here. I think, really a lot of chat happening. So it was very good to have people thinking about this.
Good. Yeah. Thank you all for coming.